I don't know.
Maybe you could just tell me a little bit about when you came to Tantalus, or what was going on at that time. What brought you out here to Madison?
Yeah. Let me give you a couple of references.
Okay.
One thing I want to mention is an article, probably you're not aware of it, in the German issue of Physikalische Blätter.
Mm-hmm.
This is 1978, the 34th issue, in December 1978. You probably can get this in the library at University of Wisconsin.
Okay.
And it's an article by myself when I was on leave and on a sabbatical in Kiel, Germany. It should have been, I guess, published in German, but they were able to let me use English. So it's articles in English, not in German. But it's entitled Synchrotron Radiation Spectroscopy.
Okay.
And I worked quite hard to make an overview of the introduction. So if you can get it, I'll give you the reference. Well, let's see. It's Synchrotron Radiation Spectroscopy, Physikalische Blätter. Let's see, December 1978, Volume 12, or it's 1978.
Okay.
I don't know if I've got that. And it should have been in German. I was on sabbatical, and I was at Kiel. The article is in English, so it should be reasonable to find it.
Sure.
And I have reviewed there the various applications of synchrotron radiation spectroscopy at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you might be interested in that. So it's 1978, volume 12, year, I don't know. You shouldn't have any problem finding it.
Sure, I'll definitely look into it.
Yeah, and that outlines in English the overview that I had at the time when I was on sabbatical and at the University of Kiel. I was a Humboldt fellow on a Humboldt fellowship, which was very nice. Appointment at German universities, and so I decided I could get away with using English instead of German. Mm-hmm. So here's an article that you can have in English, but from a German journal.
Great.
There are other articles, like, for example, I was in Prague in 1960, in Czechoslovakia, and they published a paper for me in English. but I don't know that you will find that very easily to can locate that in the in the journals in the library. I'll pass on that one.
All right.
I noticed that let's see, it would be in Science News. Let's see. Yeah, in Science News. That's a AAAS news. February 2009, volume 323 of Science, 6th of February 2009. There's a article on the U.S. science budget, and it shows the approval of billing the latest National Synchrotron Light Source facility on Long Island. It's been approved, and they're going ahead with the construction of the facility.
Mm-hmm.
That's current, and actually one of the experimental leaders in the group is a former student, Steve Hulbert. Former student of mine. He has he's got his PhD in my lab, and this sort of outlines the future as far as new facilities
are
concerned.
Certainly.
It's kind of striking that it would be, at this time, be approved, but it's a large $900 million National Synchrotron Light Source facility, and it's the latest I hear about it. It's being constructed.
So
that's a current, more or less current interest.
Sure, sir. So do you think you could tell me some of your experiences with Tantalus?
Excuse me?
Do you think you could tell me about your experiences with Tantalus and when you came here? I had watched the Smithsonian videos with you on it, and you had mentioned that you worked with a colleague of yours, Itsu Fujita.
Yeah. My experiences were interesting to us at the time, but we waited a long time for the bright conditions. Let's see, where is that discussed best? Probably in your reviews, the one by Ed Rowe, with pictures and so forth. I guess I could. I could give you another reference where at about the time of the kind of work that we were doing, if that's of interest. Review of Scientific Instruments, Volume 41, September 1970, is a review on extreme ultraviolet spectroscopy with the use of a storage ring light source.
Mm-hmm.
And that outlines... It's by three authors, Christian Gaviller, myself, and Hizu Fujita. We were all together at the University of Illinois at the time, and it outlines a sort of general review of synchrotron radiation spectra and a storage ring light source.
Okay.
And so, in fact, this is a early discussion of the ring.
Sure.
And that you might look at that anyway. They were all three associates that worked up at Stoughton.
Okay. What times or what years did you work at Stoughton?
What years?
Yeah.
That's basically in started in 1965, I guess.
All right.
So you'll find it listed on the beginning under the Lonely Hill.
Okay.
And I worked, well, let's see, 1970, when did I return? I suppose it was, after the Gay Veller Pujita article. So it was the very early days, and ended with as a matter of fact, one of our people that you must know about, David Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
He was with University of Chicago at the time, and I was at Illinois, and we were two of the principal users of the small ring in the very early days. I had a interest in converting some of the magnets from the old synchrotron. Kirst had drawn my attention to the fact that they would make a good light source.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to get that constructed at University of Illinois. And in fact, even the magnets were salvaged from the old Betatron. And we're, you know, standing outside the building in the area where we would have constructed the new synchrotron source. It had to go through approval of the dean of the College of Engineering and so forth. I had a design made that would use those magnets. Kirst had been influential and helped me at the time in the early days, but this was after I had returned from experiments on the small ring.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that maybe a ring using those magnets and so forth would be suitable at the University of Illinois.
Okay.
It never got off the ground because of the dean of the College of Engineering, who thought that now was not the time for that sort of thing. And he was having trouble with students and so forth at the time. And we never finished installing those magnets. But we had a good design, and I think it would have been probably the first dedicated ring after Tantalus.
Mm-hmm.
I went shortly after that out to the facilities at Berkeley, well, at University of California.
Mm-hmm.
and to the storage ring in California, and worked with Bob Bachrach, one of my early students, following that inability to get help on the subject at Illinois. But this was years later. that's all part of the story, but I'll leave that one off at this point. I worked particularly, mentioned one of my students, though, Bob Bachrach,
mm-hmm.
who went with me out to Xerox Palo Alto Research Center. And we worked on a synchrotron source at the time. Of course, that's now a dedicated facility, and there's one, and that's one at Stanford, and also at University of California. And my student Bob Bachrach is no longer in synchrotron radiation, but he did some very nice experiments of photo emission using time of flight techniques.
Mm-hmm.
taking advantage of the pulse techniques of the machine. And I think these haven't been really extended, but they worked. And I know it's something I did that year in 1993. Let's see, is that correct? No, it wasn't 93. It was a lot earlier than that. That I went out to Xerox Palo Alto Research Center on a leave of absence. The Xerox lab really didn't get off the ground out there with all the politics and involved with the company, but we had at least I had a few years experience, a couple of years, and my student, PhD student, Bob Bachrach, stayed about 10 years at the Xerox Palo Alto lab after that, and has now moved to other duties with applied materials research lab, where he is having a great time.
Where was this lab?
The lab, the Xerox Palo Alto Research Lab, made use of the machine in Berkeley.
Okay, okay.
And it was the synchrotron radiation done in those days. The head of the laboratory for Xerox was George Paik. He passed away a couple of years ago, but so there's a bit of history of synchrotron development and use there. Of course, it went into full operation as a synchrotron source after being a high-energy facility.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they are still planning further work with it at the University of California. Xerox has kind of pulled out of the area, mm-hmm. as far as that research is concerned, anyway. And in fact, I think the lab, the actual Xerox lab, is no longer there. So that was one of the things that we did following the early days.
Mm-hmm. And then you said in 1965 you came out to Stoughton?
Well, this was well after I'd been up to Stoughton.
Okay, okay.
Way after this, after I returned to the University of Illinois.
Okay.
And then took a sabbatical, or a leave of absence anyway, to work on the facility at California.
Okay. All right.
It's interesting that, I don't know, some interest in current articles. There was an article in Physics Today this year in June on the German center making use of free electron laser facilities, mm-hmm. and so forth. And this is an article that shows what sort of happened outside Hamburg. The facility I used in Germany in that reference and time I gave you was at the Hamburg facility.
That was Daisy, right?
That now has getting a new lab close by for free electron laser science. And that's kind of interesting. It contrasts the work at the Max Planck Institute and so forth It's in the Hamburg synchrotron facility that we started making some of the first measurements on my leave of absence when I was on sabbatical in Kiel.
Mm-hmm.
But it goes on with new facilities. This is quite recent. It's June 2009, Physics Today.
Okay.
I don't know what else might be of interest there.
I'd say for now that's enough. You gave me three articles to check out, and I think that should be good for now, unless there's anything else you would like to add to your time.
No, that's okay. I'd be happy to comment further if, on any of these. It looks like the subject use of these synchrotron sources for it continues.
Yeah, certainly. Well, thanks a lot for your time, Fred.
Yeah, thank you. Give me a call again if you want.
Certainly will.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.